Hello, Chevra. Conference call number 164 with Rebbe. The definition of Rebbe Minyan Hammer. I wish everyone in advance a Chag Sameach, and thank Rebbe for taking the time out of his busy schedule to help all our money.
Baruch Hashem. The schedule is busy with good things, such as this conference call. Question one. My family practice has been for many, many years to not consider peanuts to be kidneys. They're part of our annual second night Seder family-only treats. It goes back more than 50 years. Yet, as I look around, I see that most kosher organizations in America now consider peanuts to be kidneys. Should we stop eating Pesach and Pesach because of that? Well, we understand very well this is a dispute, like many other things. If you look in the Dirshu, Siman Tov Nun Gimel, footnote 6, not only was Rav Moshe Mekel, but Rav Cheskel Abramsky used to give out peanuts on Pesach. So therefore, those who do it, do it. We're not here to criticize anybody who thinks that it's permissible. Two of the greatest giants of their time, of a generation or two ago, said the same thing. On the other hand, maybe a good idea to stop, because as the family grows, children are going to marry into the family. They don't eat peanuts, because their family doesn't eat peanuts. So it may be a good idea. To make it obligatory, I don't think so. One can make an argument that you must stop, because if this psak of Gedolei Hador has been ignored for decades, and there's nobody, I'm talking about Ashkenazim now, of course, no Ashkenazim are following this custom, then you begin to worry that maybe it's what we call in our language a minig hamakom. Once something is a minig hamakom, it becomes binding on the makom. I'm not sure. I still think there are enough Ashkenazim who are still following the psak of the Gedolim of the Jewish generation to make it optional to follow that psak, not a full minig hamakom of all Ashkenazim with respect to peanuts. But it may be advisable to change, but again, it's a family dynamics question. Number two, Hallel, two calls ago, recitation of Hallel at the Seder. Should everyone say Hodu or only their leader? What should the couple do with having their own two-person Seder do? One person Seder. You have to look in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tov Ayin Tesif Aleph. The Ramah says that the Baal HaSeder, called there the Gadol, the one who's running the Seder, he says the four Hodus. And the Acherim, others, answer Hodu four times. And it's a mitzvah to find three people so that there be two people answering the one person who's saying, you know, Hodu and Yomana, Yomuna, Yomuna. Ideally, it should be three men. However, the Ramah says it can be done by his wife and children. So therefore, you know, if you can get three men, it's fine. If you can't, you can't. So if you have three people, including a woman, so she joins. What about Seder for two? This is not theoretical. What happened during COVID? Everyone had a Seder. Well, we had a Seder for two in our house. So I said, Hodu, Yoma, Yomru, Yomru. And my wife answered, Hodu, four times. That's a two-person Seder we had. A one-person Seder, then there's nothing. A one-person Seder, you can't have someone answering himself. So therefore, it's impossible. So I would say in one person Seder that the person saying Hallel should just say Hodu, Yoma, Yomu, Yomu, and not go back and Hodu each time. Number three, if the floor in front of the Aron Kodesh is made of tiles, do we need to put down a mat for Duchening? It's not an absolute requirement. The Piskei Tshuvos in Siman Kuf Chaf Ches, footnote 144, says that if the place where the Kohanim is standing on exactly the same level as the rest of the shul, so it's a good idea to put a little mat so they should be at least be a little bit elevated above the general surface of the shul itself, implying that if, as in many, if not most cases, the Kohanim are by the Aron Kodesh and there is an elevation of a step or two, there will be no requirement whatsoever to put a mat, tiles or no tiles. Number four, in the past, Chumash of a Pesach was not as complicated as it has become. So how far do we go determining the Jewish custody, ownership of products sold in our supermarkets? If they receive from distributors who sell their chametz and continue operating, there's no way to know at which point, after Matzah Yontif, that the box of Cheerios came into the possession of the distributor on Pesach and made it to the supermarket shelf. Do we need to advocate to our balabatim to spend $7 for the box of cereal in the kosher supermarket after Pesach when they can pay $4 or less for the same box in their local supermarket? That's a very good question. Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Tov Mem Tes, Suffolk, there's room to be makel. Mr. Brewer has a dispute about it. And Sifkot and Hay, it seems to me that this is included in the category of Suffolk. Generally speaking, we say Suffolk, the Rabbana Lakula, certainly if it's no way to know, impossible to find out, we apply that principle. It seems to me that, you know, if it require who knows how many hours of searching and calling and emailing to try to find out, and even then you may not find out the perfect answer, that would be included in a situation which we're allowed to rely on Suffolk Rabbanu Lekula, even if in theory it is a way to know, but it's too complicated, as the questioner mentioned, to really figure it out. Question five. We have always turned off the gas stove on Yom Tov when done cooking, as we were told Rabbi Feinstein permits. Recently, we were told that this is not the current practice. We should stop. Should we stop? Can you explain the dispute? We grew up with Rabbi Gedalia Felder in Toronto, and he personally turned off the stove, told my parents such was mutter. Can you speak about how and why such practices change? Do we have to follow the current consensus, or can we do as we were always told, even if the current consensus is different? It's a very good question. Ramosh has a tshuva, or Chaim Chelek Alev Simon Tzadi Gimel. He is very, very coy. He says, if it's permissible to lower the fire, it's even permissible to turn off the fire. He never said that it's permissible. He writes in the tshuva a hint. I have a big chiddush, but I don't want to print it. So the Mesorah is, the Ramosh in fact held it was a mutter. Rabbi Felder, he knew Ramosh. Rabbi Felder's son, Rav Arizal, was very close to Rav Moshe, so it's possibly heard it either from Rav Moshe directly or through his son, and that's why he passed with the Godel Ador. He himself was the Godel B'Yisrael. So therefore, those who are relying on it, rely on it. In print, Beferish, they quote from the grandson of the Yeshuas Yaakov, he was Megil, but everybody else thinks it's prohibited. If you take a look in Simon, Tov Kuf Beis, the Pisket Shuvas, footnote 23, he says that everyone holds it's not allowed. Again, I can't say for sure. It's a matter of judgment, how you would describe the gas in the supply system. Is it there already? In which case, you are not permitted to stop it. Or it's not there yet. And prevent it from coming in. And there are comparisons made to candles and other such things. It's also a question whether you consider it to be immediate or not. Some wanted to suggest it's not immediate because there's enough gas left for the few seconds in the pipe between the place where you turn it off and the actual fire. But that's also hard. It's almost instantaneous. I think it's better to follow the consensus. But once again, as you spoke before about peanuts, Rav Moshe was certainly the God of Ador. Those who rely on him for peanuts, rely on him for turning off a fire on On Yontif, have certainly an Adam Gadol Ma'od 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 to rely upon. But it is true that in both cases, the consensus, I don't know if it changed. I don't think the consensus ever was that way in either of these two cases. So, but with a Klal Gadol, that a person can rely upon a Yochid B'Shat HaDchak, and certainly a Yochid of this caliber, but if it's not a Shat HaDchak, probably it's better to follow today's consensus. Number six. A Jew is discharged from the hospital on Shabbos and is a cholish ein bo sakana. The hospital arranged an electric Uber to take him home. The hospital is outside the Eruv. A non-Jewish worker brings a bag of the patient's clothing to the car, wearing it if it's not feasible. The non-Jewish driver carries it from the car into the house. If the Jew wears that clothing at home that day, since the non-Jew who transports the clothing is doing it as part of his job, and adata the nafshe of it, or is the benefit prohibited because of Maisa Shabbos on behalf of the Jew? Maisa Shabbos, if it's prohibited. Here, it's permissible in the first place. Why? It says Beferish in the Gemara, Shabbos Kuf Chav Tes, it's found in Shulchan Aruch, Arachayim, Hilchos Shabbos, that one may ask a non-Jew to do even an Isa de Oraisa for the help of a Chole She'ein Bo Sakana. I have to assume this is a chola, as you said, it's Ebo Sakana, and therefore it's permissible, and therefore there's no Isra no to talk about. I'm impressed that they were going to arrange an electric Uber to take him home. That would make it even more lenient, because the electric Uber is presumably a Derabbanan, and it's a Shvus to Shvus, which is permissible, even if he would not qualify necessarily for chola Shem Bo Sakana. That's an interesting idea if it can be ordered in general. Better to order it to lower the level of the prohibition. Number seven, as usual, during difficult times, many people are saying that this current anti-Jewish climate and war in Israel are harbingers to the coming of Mashiach. If he comes before Pesach, are there practical halachas we should know and share with our congregants? Should those who can afford to go to Yerushalayim, what should we know lemaisa about the Korban Pesach, Pesach Sheni, etc.? These are all great questions. I recommend to the rabbi that he wants to talk to his congregants. He should talk about what they should be doing for the war effort, which is tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah. They want to learn the laws of kachim. So the Chafetz Chaim in his day already put out likutei halachos because he himself was a kohen. He wanted people to know what to do when the Mashiach comes. You know, the times were bad when the Chafetz Chaim was alive. I would say much worse than they are today. And in the interim, as you know, we had World War II, also much worse than today. I was told that in 1942, there was a whole tumult, Mashiach is coming, because that year, the Gematria Tov Shin Beis, it's Gematria Shabbos. But you know, it didn't happen. It still hasn't happened. It's very dangerous to predict the coming of the Mashiach. So when he doesn't come, we hope he comes every day. If he doesn't come, there could be a disappointment on the part of the congregants who they hear the rabbi say, Mashiach is coming before Pesach. So we can say that we hope he comes before Pesach. If he comes before Pesach, I guarantee you the Mashiach will find a way to teach Klal Yisrael how to do everything properly. You know, we're already now exactly a week before Erev Pesach, all kinds of lumda shesugis. What happens in Torah Aduma and Erev Pesach? We can't go into these sugis right now. And I'm not opposed to learning the sugis. It's a great idea. People should learn kachim. But to say that, you know, guys, you know, the Mashiach is coming before Pesach, that would be a dangerous statement because although we hope it's true, we have no guarantee. Number eight. For the nauseous lady, over how long does she have to eat her kazayas? And for a regular person, how long is kazayas pras to eat his kazayas or kazayasin? If the matzah does not stay down, must she eat it again? Does she bench? All good questions. So we know achilas pras. We don't know how long that takes. And the estimates vary wildly. Estimates vary from 2 minutes to 9 minutes. So most would assume it's around 4 minutes. So for this nauseous lady, tell her she has up to 4 minutes to eat the kazayas. But of course, you give her a small kazayas. That's the most important thing. A smaller kazayas will be able to, she hopefully will be able to take down and keep down over 4 minutes. For a regular person, she tried to do it within 2 minutes and eat more later. We've spoken in the past that the Maharal and the based on the Rambam, and my Rebbe said it, and the Siv said it, that the more you eat, it's a greater mitzvah, because ice is the minimum. Okay, if it doesn't stay down, eat it again. The Piskei Tshuva says in Siman Tov, Ayin Hey, footnote 70, no, quoting from the Minchas Chinuch, Mitzvah Yud, and the Mikroi Kodesh, and the stipler, that's found in Piskei Tshuva's Siman Kuf Pei Dalet, footnote 32, that you don't bench. Why aren't you bench? Look, it says in the Gemara, it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, if the it's already in this akel, it's been digested, too late to bench, you don't bench. Here it's even more than that. It came up, came out. So therefore, you're able to yotze the mitzvah of kazayas matzah on the one hand, but you don't bench on the other hand. Okay, 9. If an oval shiva ended this the week before Pesach, they get a haircut on Erev Pesach. Practically nowadays, he's still considered shloshim after Pesach as far as his kedima and shliach tzibur. So, an oval for whom? An oval for anyone other than a parent. It's obvious you can take a haircut before an Erev Pesach. That's a Gemara. However, for a parent, it's a big machlokes. Big. There's even probably a typo in the Mishnah Berurah on this question, whether he meant, he said, Toch Lamed, maybe it's supposed to be Yom Lamed, whatever it is, there are Mekilim, and in my opinion, there's room to rely on the Mekilim, that even for a father and a mother, you may take a haircut on Erev Pesach, although others disagree. For other Avelim, for other relatives, it's certainly permissible. As far as the Kedima, you continue the Kedima 30 full days, notwithstanding the fact that the laws of Avelis don't apply, but the Kedima still does apply. Number 10, if one goes to a relative of Pesach and is given his own room area for the Chag, is he responsible to make the Bedika with a Bracha? What if he's not bringing any Chametz with him? Well, if the Balabais, the relative already did the Bedika, your partner. Otherwise, of course you're Chayav. You can't live in a house with in a room where there's no Bedika. You have to make a Bracha, presumably. And if you didn't bring your own chametz, maybe there was chametz left there from the whole year, from the balabas. You got to ask him, did you make a bedikah in the shum or not? If he did, you don't have to do a bedikah at all. If he didn't, you have to do a bedikah with a bracha. 11. If one goes to a hotel before his mother bedikah, is he responsible to make a bedikah with a bracha? Halacha different if you're going to an Airbnb. It seems to me, and my facts may be wrong, but I think they're right, that a hotel charges so much money that they can be relied upon to do a proper bedikah, not b'toras bedikah, b'toras cleaning the room. It seems to me that they clean the room very well. Now, they may leave an item for you on purpose, not from the last person who was there. They may leave, who knows, I don't know what they leave, a bottle of liquor. I don't know what they may leave there. So that's a quick look, may still with the story, but to leave junk around from the previous tenant of the hotel, it seems to me that any self-respecting hotel would not do that. And therefore, I believe that even though it wasn't a formal bedika, no new bedika is necessary at all. Airbnb is the opposite. Airbnb, you have no idea who was there before you. How do you know how well they clean up? Again, that's my understanding. If my understanding is correct, it's an obligation to a bedika in an Airbnb. 12. May one use a mechanical scale on the Oseda to weigh his shurim? If yes, what is the shear in terms of weight for matzah and maror? A very, very good question. We all know that for matzah, the shear is like kazayas. Kazayas is a volume measure. It's not a weight measure. And therefore, the reason why this question is being asked because for an average individual at the Seder, it's basically impossible to measure the volume properly. You make matzah meal and put it in the cup. It doesn't really work so well. It doesn't work so well. So therefore, a simpler etzah would be to weigh it. To weigh it, put it on a scale. That's also not that easy. You need a very precise scale. A very precise scale, you know, is not so easy to find. So, but if one wants to do that, so you have to look at some of the equivalencies that we have, right? What exactly is the shear of an egg? What's the shear of an egg? We're not exactly sure. The poskim say that an egg is 50 cc's. If that's the case, so then we understand that the biggest chumrah of kezayis, which is a half of kebetza, but a half of kebetza without the peel, that would be not 50 cc's, but 45 cc's. So it would be 22 and a half cc's. That would be the way if you want to measure it by volume. It's permissible to weigh because there's a medida l'mitzvah. What does it come out? According to my understanding with this shear, it would be approximately 0.4 of an ounce. Approximately 0.4 of an ounce is the shear of a kezayis based upon the chumrah de kashir that it's a half of the size of an egg, and based on what I understand the people say today, that an egg is 50 cc's. Just today, someone was telling me they think that perhaps the eggs that they measure are closer to 60 cc's. If that would be the case, so all the shurim have to change a little bit. Instead of a revius of 2.5 ounces, it would be 3 ounces. And instead of a kezayis being approximately 1/5 of the average handmaster, would go up to 1/4, again approximately, of the handmaster. And therefore they say over here, instead of being 0.4 of an ounce, it would be approximately a half an ounce. So you can do your own homework on what the real egg is these days. Again, I'm told it's 50. Someone told me it's closer to 60. So, you want to be a little bit more machmer, can't hurt. Unless you have a bad stomach. Next question. When checking hand matzahs, if someone's looked folded over, what is the getter of matzah kofel? When finds among his matzahs a kofel on Pesach, what should he do? B, if one sees a noticeable line remaining in the matzah where a crease was during the rolling process, this have a din of kofel. What should one do in such a case? Okay, so in Siman Tov Samach Aleph, that's where a discussion of kofel comes up. And the Pisket Shuvas there, footnote 57, he says, our thin matzah is mutter. Because the Ramah writes there and says, hey, the reason that the kofel is a problem is she'ein ha'esh sholeit. The fire will not reach that part. Our fires are so hot and our matzahs are so thin that there's nothing to worry about. That's the psak that he quotes, and I think it's the correct psak. 14. I've heard different opinions about the permissibility of kashering quartz countertops. What is the base of the machlokas and what is my opinion? So the OU, Baruch Hashem, gave a full answer to this question. They quote Rabbi Belsky, Zichrono Livracha, that said that quartz is permissible because most of it is made from stone, and stone can be kashered. And even though there's some synthetic mixed in, most authorities assume that synthetic can also be kashered. Against Rav Moshe was more machmir on plastic and other synthetics, especially for Pesach. So, you know, I tell people it's better to rely upon to follow Rav Moshe on Pesach for plastic proper. But here, there are two additional reasons to be lenient. Number one, it's mostly stone. Number two, even if it's not kashered, it's unlikely you're going to put a piece of kosher the Pesach food on the, directly on the counter. It's even unlikely that you put chametz directly on the counter. Having said all this, my recommendation for all countertops, no matter what it's made from, is simply to cover it. In our house, that's what we do. We cover it. But the evidence, if it wasn't covered, there's much room to be makel. Even if it would have some bli in it, we paskin, ein belu ayotzi mikli below rotev, and we rotev called the chavas das, means a puddle, which is very rare. So therefore, it's room b'di'evet. So even the chatchila, the best way is to just to cover it. And one wants to learn Rabbi Belsky, I think they should do so. Want to be strict, so just cover it. 15. I gave most kitim to a family, and they inquired whether they need to give ma'isik suffer from it. Could they look at this as though they had been given actual Pesach food? Or does that not work because they could have used the money for whatever they wish? The family is in debt and owes back taxes for which wages are being garnished? A good question. You know, ma'isik suffer is bechlal not a chiyuv d'oraisa, not a chiyuv d'rabbanan, not even a minig which has been universally accepted. It's a minig which many people have taken on themselves. These people have no money. They're putter from ma'isik suffer completely. They know that they're in terrible debt. So the question, they should not be giving ma'isik suffer. In addition, it could be that if someone gives them the money, almanas, they should use it only for their own food, then they're not allowed to give ma'isik suffer. They're misappropriating the money, so they shouldn't give it. 16. In Kedusha Shachos on Shabbos morning, a mispal accidentally says the Musaf Pid of Kavodo instead of Azbakol. When he realizes his mistake, should he go back and say Azbakol? Or should he simply continue with the appropriate lines for the Shachas period for the next response? Or should he continue with the Musa period rather than end up with a hybrid Kedusha? It's a great question. Haven't seen anywhere in print. My instinct is, should go back and say Oz B'Kol. Go back and say Oz B'Kol. That's what I think. And so the Kavoda will be an extra period. Word hybrid. What can I say? It's not a hybrid. It's a Shachas Kedusha with a mistaken extra two lines put it. 16. What's Rabbanan be particular about in terms of them giving authorization to sell chametz? A few examples. Can a mother of a household sign a name for the family form, even though her husband is technically the owner? Under what circumstances do children in the family need to authorize their own sale? If an intermarried, quote, couple comes to sell their chametz, how do we look at the issue of ownership? All good questions. Generally speaking, the woman of the house has the right to do with the chametz what she wants. She buys it. She's in charge of the kitchen, and therefore she has the implicit authorization of her husband to sell it, the same as she buys it. Nonetheless, I think that it's a good idea for the husband to sign it, and if they want to be careful, they should both sign it. Let them both be involved in the mechiras chametz. Most of my mechiras chametz is done by the men. They come to me in shul or in the yeshiva, but women come to me and they sell their chametz to me, and most of them are not married at the present time, but if they would be, I think it would be acceptable as well. Children, it depends if they own their own chametz. If they own their own chametz, they should sell the chametz separately. If they don't, they don't have to. Intermarried couple, Hashem Yerachem. The only way to sell chametz for this, quote, couple is to have the Jewish partner authorize the sale. And you're not going to worry who owns it. Just have him authorize the sale. 17. How should a rabbi counsel the congregant who asked was appropriate to be said at a Leviathan about the Nifta during Chodesh Nisan? So, Midig Yisrael, no has paid him in the month of Nisan. Quoted in Shulchan Aruch, the very beginning of Hilchos Pesach. That is a significant custom, and as a significant custom, ideally, it should be followed completely. No hespedim. That's an Ashlo we try to do it. Nothing is said. Say Tillim, and that's all. That's what should be done. Some say that our hespedim aren't hespedim. We call that in our language kakaloso takanoso, because that the mitzvah of hesped is never fulfilled in the month of Shvat, so it's not prohibited in the month of Nisan. Sad commentary. What do I mean by that? A hesped is supposed to get people to cry. That's what it says. Many hespedim today, they deliver eulogies. They're very eloquent, but then no one's crying. That's one possible way around this problem. I don't recommend it. Rav Moshe has a remarkable chiddush in Or HaChaim, Chelek Aleph Siman Kuf Samech, who says that although hespedim may not be delivered by anybody else, the first degree relatives who are now in aninus and will be in avelus, an exception is made for them. Why? Because they have an obligation, as he puts it, la'orer bechi etzel acherim, to others to cry. He quotes the Mishnah in Moed Katan, that in Chol HaMoed, there was one group of women who would wail a certain way, and the others would respond in some wailing kind of voice. So you see that there's this obligation in some sense, and in the olden days, it was an obligation in certain cases to hire these women to arrange for that, and even on Chol HaMoed, which is the strictest, much more strict than Chodesh Nisan, this was the practice based upon the Gemara and the Masechta Moed Katan. That's what Moshe's Chiddush. The rest of the world, I think, doesn't accept that for various reasons. So the best thing to do, nothing, just say Tillim. If that won't work, so then you save some remarks about the person's good deeds without trying to get anyone to cry. And if it's one of those relatives, according to Rav Moshe, they can even give a tearful hesped. And Rav Moshe, again, for the third time today, the Gadol Hador Mamish, one can rely upon him, even though the consensus is not that way. 18. An Ashkenazi Jew eat on Pesach at the home of a frum Sephardi, assuming no kidneys will be served, but food served may have been cooked in pots used for kidneys on Pesach. The Pisket Shuvas in Siman Tov Nun Gimel, end of Oz Zion, in footnote 38, says that if it's an Eino Ben Yomo, which means that it wasn't used in 24 hours when the other food was prepared, it's okay. Not everyone agrees, but it's okay. Some say even within 24 hours, it's okay. But since we don't know, Stam Kelem Eino Ben Yomo, I believe it's permissible to allow this gentleman to eat the non-kidneyous food, even though it could have been cooked by the Sephardi in kidneyous kalim. If he knows for a fact it was known within 24 hours, probably better to be machmir. 19. Kashrus organizations are saying that vegetable wash sprays for home use in the market contain kidneyous. Can they be used on Pesach with the goal obviously being to spray the strawberries, for example, and wash the spray off completely? Seems to me it's okay. It's true that chametz and Pesach is a mashu. That's chametz, but not kidneys. So you wash it over as well as you can. And if there's a tiny, tiny bit left, it still would be permissible. 20. Can we review the God of what's considered shameless in regards to printed weekly Torah sheets, Shiras' materials, and Jewish newspapers? So, Rabbeinu Yitzchok Rachonon in Ein Yitzchok Simen Hei in Or HaChaim permits, based upon the fact that they were never meant for permanent use, and therefore they never had an intention to sanctify this sheet with Kedusha. And his main article is pointing that Shuv is that if you don't have Kavana to sanctify it, it's not sanctified, and therefore does not have Kedusha. Doesn't have to be going to a Geniza. Rabbi Yashiv has two tshuvas in which he quotes this. Chelek Kovetz Tshuvas Chelek Bey Simon Vav, and a little more in Chelek Aleph. You can rely on Yitzchak Elchanan. You don't have to put it into Seamus. But he does say that you shouldn't throw it out in a disgraceful fashion, because even Tzitzis, where the Gemara is the Beferish, that Nizrokin, they can be thrown out, it's quoted in Simon Chaf Aleph in Sif Mishabur Sif Katan Zion, that you should do it in a respectable way. What's a respectable way? We'll wrap it up in a plastic and put it into the recycle. Rabbi Yosef's second shuvah is Chelek Aleph Simon Kuf Tezva, along these lines. There was a final question which was just submitted to me very recently. I didn't see it on the original, but I'll read it to you. Is there any way one can be a delivery person for a non-kosher restaurant? A relative of someone in shul asked about delivering chametz al Chol HaMoed. In conversation, it emerged that this is his year-round job. He is paid by the hour for the non-kosher restaurant plus tips from the customers. If permissible, it pays off different. So, here we know. This fellow is not eating it. There is a prohibition of schor b'dvar masurim. He's not owning it, and therefore it should be okay. However, there is something called an iser hana. Whatever is aser b'hana, you can't have any hana from it. So the question is, what's the halacha all year long? What's the halacha on Pesach? So all year long, there could be some iser hana. I mean, the one that I can think of is basa b'chalav. Basa b'chalav, as we read recently. Also, Vashkadi Bachalayim, three times, one for Yisra Hana. But the truth is, it's limited. Yisra Hana can only be Pesar Behema, not Pesar Of. Only if it's Bishul. And according to some authorities, the Rambam, only if it's kosher meat, not if it's Nevela. Although most may disagree, but since we're not sure what there is there, it seems to me that all year long, he's allowed to be a delivery boy, and I imagine in every single delivery, at least some of the food is mutabana, so we can attribute his salary and his tips to that part of the delivery. Pesach is different, because Pesach, you know, I'm not sure what kind of restaurant this is, but it seems to me that many restaurants have bread and cookies and all kinds of hummus items. I would recommend for this fellow to take his vacation on Chol HaMoed Pesach and somehow or other make up the income in a different way. I wish everybody a Chag Kosher V'Sameach.
Okay, Rabbi, can we do the Wednesday after Yom Kippur?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.